Good evening. I welcome you with all my heart. It is good to be with you once again. The holidays are over. Back to normalcy. Whatever that means. When I say to you that all is well, this is exactly what it means. Unconditional. All is well, just the way things are. No matter how things look, no matter what you think, no matter what appears to be going on in this world, all is well. Think about this. Just the way things are. There is nothing to add, nothing to delete. Just the way things are. And the jungle lions are eating sheep. Monkeys eat insects. Man eats animals. All kinds of dastardly things seem to be going on in this world. You see things. You look at the world. There are wars. There's man's and humanity's a man. And in your personal life, all sorts of situations are taking place. There's a tendency to be judgmental, to see things a certain way and not like it. For you think it should be another way. Yet I can assure you all is well. All is extremely well. Just the way it is. The problem arises when you want to change something. When you want to put your energy into a situation and try to change it the way you think it should be. Or when you see something that seems the way it shouldn't be with someone else, you believe it should be another way. The problem lies within yourself. There are no problems in reality. There is absolutely nothing wrong. Everything is just the way it's supposed to be. I keep reiterating this point. Many of you see certain situations and you don't like it. When you don't like something, it's as if you're telling God how to run the world. If you can only understand that the self is all there is, and you are that, then you will understand that everything that emanates from you is the self. The whole universe emanates from your mind. You are in everything. You are in the murderer. You are in the lion eating the sheep. You're in the monkeys eating the insects. You're in the good things and in the bad things, so-called. Everything comes from you. This is your universe. You created it just the way it is. It's your fault. Why did you do this? You can't say you didn't do it for as long as you believe something with feeling. You see something that you don't like. Something horrifies you. Something upsets you. Then you have created it. Where else did it come from? Where did it come from? If it didn't come from you. Things just didn't appear. They had to come through somebody's mind. It is the mind that creates conditions. If you only realize the mind doesn't exist, there would be no condition in your life to create or uncreate. The only reason there is a condition is because you're allowing something called the mind to show you and tell you what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad, what is up, what is down. You're doing it. I want you to stop it. Look at the mess you're making in the world. Just think, if you didn't think, we'd have joy and peace and love. But you keep on thinking, thinking, thinking. Always thinking, you never stop thinking. You go to sleep, you think. You wake up, you think. All during the day, you think. You're always thinking and judging and criticizing and condemning. Wanting to change things. Yet again, when you want to do these things, you are saying that God doesn't know what the hell he's doing. That's what you're saying. For you're saying something that you don't like. The seer is at fault. The seer is always at fault. I'm not trying to say that you bring conditions onto yourself. This is not a New Age philosophy where you think you are responsible for all the hurts in your life. In reality and truth, there are no hurts. There is nothing happening. No one is responsible for anything. But as long as you believe you're human, and you believe you're confronted with situations, then in all appearances, it looks like you're suffering because you're reacting to a condition that you don't like. What if you left everything alone? What if you observed something and never reacted to it mentally or physically? You just left it alone. You didn't fight it. You didn't try to analyze it. You didn't debate it. You just looked at it and left it alone. And kept your mind centered on yourself. What do you think will happen? You would have to become the self. You would have to become effortless pure awareness, which is your true nature to begin with. But as long as you react to things, even your own body, when you believe your body is sick, your body has mental anguish, your body is suffering because of some condition. This is what blasphemy means. For in truth, you are not that body. You are not that sick body. You are not that body that has mental anguish. That's not you. That body does not even exist. It's as if you've been hypnotized into believing you've got a body that goes through all kinds of experiences, and you've got a mind that thinks all kinds of things, and you suffer. But I say to you, there's no such body. There's no such mind. There's no such world. How can this be? How can this be when you're feeling it yourself? When something has hurt you? When someone appears to have done something to you you don't like? When you're suffering mentally or physically? How can you reconcile this with what I'm saying to you? Well, let's look at it a different way. When you believe you were born, all of these things were preordained in your life to transpire, or at least transpire sometime during your lifetime. So everything in your life was preordained. The way you're going to react, the way you're going to live, the way you're going to judge. It is preordained when you leave your body. Therefore, everything has been taken care of for you. You have absolutely nothing to do. You have absolutely nothing to worry about. That's one way to look at it. If you think you're human. If you believe you're human, everything has been planned for you. Your whole life has been ordained, outlined. But now if you come to the conclusion that you're not human, that you are not the body or the mind, that there are no problems, you were never born, and so you have nothing to do with your existence, there never will be a time when you leave your body. You are the same, yesterday, today, and forever. Absolute reality, self-contained, all-pervading, Brahman, Satchitananda, Nirvana. This is your real nature. This is what you really are. Then why does the world affect you so? Why don't you awaken? You don't know. You don't know because you are already awake. There's nothing to know. In order to know something, there has to be a knower. Who is the knower? Never answer that question. For there isn't any knower. A knower does not exist. Consequently, there's absolutely nothing to know. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to be or become. There is no enlightenment. There is no self-realization. There is absolute blank. And you are the blankety blank blank. Why do you think of yourself as a person that goes through experiences? Because you appear to go through experiences. This is the appearance in your life. You have one experience after another. But don't you have the same experiences in dreams? When you dream that you're going through experiences. One experience after the other. Yet you wake up and you realize it's a dream. Yet you sit here and take life so seriously. Believing that's a dream. But this is reality. Yet if I approached you in your dream, you would tell me this was reality. You would swear up and down that the dream is a reality. And I didn't know what I was talking about. Yet you woke up. And you call the experience a dream. What to call this experience? A mortal dream? A lie? Delusion? Even by calling it names like this, it is a mistake. Because there's someone left calling names. There has to be someone to name something. So that someone is calling this a delusion. Calling this existence a lie. By those very thoughts, the experiences become true and real for you. There's absolutely nothing you can do about your situation except keep quiet. Do you follow what I'm saying? If you try to denounce the world and you keep saying the world is a lie, you will feel the world more deeply. For there's someone who's saying that. It is that someone who has to be destroyed. Not the condition, not the situation. For the condition, the situation is only an appearance coming from the someone. So do not work on trying to remove the delusion in front of you. Do you see what I'm saying? Do not do the meditation on trying to see the world as nothing. Rather, try to imagine or see who the someone is who sees the world as nothing. It is that someone that has to be annihilated. Not the effect, but the cause. The cause is that there is someone thinking about all of these things. There's someone trying to be self-realized. There's someone trying to end all their problems. There's someone trying to heal themselves or others. There's someone who judges. It is that someone that has to go. And the name of that someone is I. It is I who does this. I am trying to become self-realized. But the I is already self-realized. For the I in reality is Brahman, pure awareness. This is the true nature of the I. Therefore, the I that you think is real doesn't even exist. For there can only be one I. And that I is I am, all pervading. Do you see this? It is the I, or the thinker, or the knower, who has to be eliminated. For in reality, there's absolutely nothing to know. If you are all-pervading, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, what else do you want? You've got everything. You are everything. So when you try to know something, you're making a grave mistake. This is a very important point, remember this. In Advaita Vedanta, the knower is the last to go. What comes after the knower? Silence. There is nothing else. Just think how much knowledge you've gathered all these years. Reading so many books, meditating for years, seeing so many teachers, having so many discussions, debates, arguments. Can't you see now? This is what has been holding you back. This is what has been holding you back. For you have believed you are the knower. Or you have to become a knower to become free. Yet no one has to know anything, for there's absolutely nothing to know. Why is there nothing to know? Because there's only omnipresence, infinity. Absolute reality. And there's no name for this. In other words, you cannot know absolute reality. You cannot know pure awareness. As long as there's somebody who knows about it, it doesn't exist. It's only when you put an end to knowing that you become the self. The self has no shape, no form, no identity. It is nothing. Yet you are that. What are you going to do about it? When most of you walk out of the store, you'll start discussions, arguments. You'll start thinking about your outside world. You'll start thinking about your body, your material happiness or your material suffering. And you'll be back where you started. What I'm saying to you is if you can only learn to keep quiet in your mind, if your mind learns to keep quiet, it will become weaker and weaker. And you will notice that all the action you're taking has absolutely nothing to do with you. Yet you will do things, go places, experience the so-called life, and you are doing absolutely nothing. For there's no one left to do anything. There's no one left to get sick. There's no one left to be healthy. There's no one left to be poor. There's no one left to be rich. There's no one left to possess anything. And there's no one left not to possess anything. There's just no one left. And this is what gives you freedom. And the only way you can get to that place is to keep quiet, to be silent. When you are silent, you live in eternity. You live in that split second, the opening, the gap between the world and yourself. And there's no past and there's no future. There's no body and there's no mind. There is just that split second in eternity. And you are that. No matter how many times I tell you this, you're still going to get involved mentally. You're still going to think and judge and go through all these things that we're talking about. If you do this, do not complain. Do not complain about your mental anguish, about your suffering, about your problems. For you will not give them up. The only way to give them up is what? to get rid of the person who thinks they have them. Can't you see this now? Not to imagine they're not there. Not to think of something else. Not to try to resolve the problems and change bad into good. But to get rid of that thought, that feeling, that believes there's something else besides the self. And you do this simply by being quiet. Simple. You just shut up. You stop making noises called talking. You stop trying to win points. Who can outtalk who? Who knows more philosophy than somebody else? Who's the right teacher? Who's this and who's that? In a real devotee, those thoughts don't even come to your mind. A devotee never thinks about things like this. A true devotee simply acts in the moment and does whatever has to be done without thought, without criticism, without judgment, and goes on to the next thing the same way, and goes through their whole life in total happiness, in total peace, and in total joy. And the only way you can ever have true happiness, true peace and true love, is by keeping quiet. For love, happiness, joy, the self, pure awareness, are all synonymous. They present themselves when you are quiet. You therefore have to make up your mind. Do I really want to awaken? It's so simple, yet so difficult. If you really want to awaken, you have to keep that thought first in your life. It comes before everything. If you really want to awaken, something within you will tell you what to do. You will know. For the reality which you are is already done. Therefore, it will tell you from within what to do. To be yourself. All you have to do is to keep quiet. You know you can carry on a conversation and still be quiet. When you speak words and you don't really put any effort into them, you don't really feel them, you have no emotion in them, then you are quiet. Everything I'm telling you, you can do mentally. I'm not saying you should take a vow of silence. I'm merely saying, do not put any emotion into the words that you speak to someone. Do not take the words seriously. You have to live in this world, therefore talking is necessary. But do not believe every word you say has something to do with your life, or anybody else's life, or anything else. Keep your words down to a minimum. If someone talks to you and tells you something, you don't have to elaborate. You can say yes or no. It's like going back to your childhood. It's sort of funny. As we grow up, we try to be intelligent. And we want to know many words. And have long talks and great debates. And we want to express ourselves so someone can understand us. Yeah, has anyone ever understood you? Does anyone care about the words you speak? Is there interest in their words? They want you to hear them. And you want them to hear you. So you're talking, 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 talking. And you become frustrated. You're never getting anywhere. You believe somebody will appreciate you if you explain yourself well. Well, you've explained yourself. Has anybody appreciated you? Nobody cares. They just want to hear themselves talk. Drop it. Be rid of it. Feel free to ask questions. I guess nobody wants to talk.
Last point, it seems to me that there are times when you're talking with a friend and there's a kind of engagement and there's a caring and there's a communion and the words are not as important as the feeling. And so that goes against, in my experience, what you describe.
This appears to be true. But in the long run, it doesn't matter. As you keep talking about yourself to somebody else, your feelings are expressed, their feelings are expressed, and you feel you have a loving relationship. That's for a time only. You can have a loving relationship and speak little words, few words, or not speak at all. The words that come out of your mouth is to try to make the other person see how you feel about them, about yourself. You know, look at the way things are in relationships in this world. Relationships hardly ever last. There are so many problems. And this is because of words. As an example, when you want to marry somebody, when you want to live with somebody, you tell them all these beautiful words so they will accept you. But then when you've achieved what you want, things begin to sort of change after a while. And pretty soon you're raising your voice and you're using foul words. The thing has changed. It's not the same as it used to be. As long as you're working from your humanhood, there will always be problems. The thing to do is to understand who you are first. Realize you are not the body, you are the mind, or the doer, or the knower, or the speaker. This is not you. If you can realize this first before you talk, you will say very little. And the little things you do say will be very meaningful. Something within you will speak the few words that you have to say. And they will be the right words to cause a positive reaction. Do not feel you have to speak too much to anyone about anything. Truth is silence. Reality is quietness. Peace and love are stillness. Be still and know that I am God.
Robert, there's something I don't understand. In fact, it's hard to even formulate the question, but you were talking about not trying to eliminate or convince yourself of the false appearances of things, but simply to eliminate the self. And yet Maharshi taught that you could find realization by the use of neti neti, or by saying, not this, not this. This seems contradictory to me.
There's no contradiction. When you say neti neti, it's a method, a process of removing the world from your mind. What was your question?
Well, it seemed to me that previously you were saying that you shouldn't try to remove the world from your mind, but to remove the mind.
Oh, yes. When you say neti neti, you are basically removing all of the objects, the worldly things from your mind.
But isn't that what you just said, that we didn't need to focus on?
There's no need to focus on that if you don't want to. It's just another method. It is easier to realize you are not the doer and you are not the knower. To get rid of the knower by keeping quiet. This is much easier. Neti-neti is another procedure, another process. Just like watching your breath. Just like becoming the observer. Just like saying, I am. There are different methods, there are different ways of doing the same thing. We like to teach the direct method. We simply awaken by keeping still. If you think you have to use methods, neti-neti is like using a mantra. It's not any different than using a mantra. When you use a mantra, you are shutting out the world and thinking only about your mantra. And the world disappears gradually but surely. When you use neti-neti, you're getting rid of everything in the world the same way. When you do what I said, when you do not talk, and you get rid of the knower, you are getting rid of the person who does neti-neti. You're getting rid of the whole ball of wax. You're getting rid of everything. When everything is gone, then you're yourself. You have to use the method that suits you best. There's really no contradiction, there's just different methods.
So I understand what you're saying, that it would be simpler and more direct to simply eliminate the knower or the thought.
It's necessary to free you and become self-realized. If you want to practice neti-neti, there's nothing wrong with that. But you have to get to the point when neti-neti has to go also. When you're saying not this, not this, and everything is gone, then not this has to go also. So you come to the place where you keep still. The end result is always silence. The end of every practice is silence. What is meditation for? Meditation is to make your mind one-pointed so you can become quiet and silent. A mantra is to make your mind one-pointed so you can become quiet and silent. Neti-neti is to make your mind one-pointed by obliterating the whole universe. And you become quiet and silent. All these methods leave you to quietness and silence. So I'm just saying to you, keep quiet and you don't have to do anything.
There's a real, an old story, the teaching story, where a guru tells his disciple that everything is well, all is good, all is God, see God in everything, you don't have to do anything, you don't have and he's walking along, and some guy yells out, look out, there's a wild elephant coming. And the guy, remembering his guru that all is well and everything is good, looks and sees the elephant coming and sees that it's Ram himself appears as an elephant. And he admires the elephant, and the elephant picks him up and throws him down and drops him. Mm-hmm. And who later on his guru walks by and says something, well, why didn't you get out of the way? And he said, well, you told me to see God in everything. And the guru says, well, why didn't you see God in the guy that told you that there's a wild elephant coming and get out of the way? So, but my question is it's like a matter of perspective. I mean, I get the feeling that the words that you use are saying that we should not interact with our environment, or we should, you know, see everything as good and pure and whole, which it always is. But isn't it good and pure and whole to be politically active and to get out there and sell those used cars or you know, fall in love or whatever, you know, go shopping, you know?
Of course. I never said to be inactive. I said to be spontaneous. To be totally spontaneous. To do whatever you have to do without believing you are the doer. That's all.
So I can still be politically active and... But then you won't be changing good for bad, though.
Exactly. You will not have an eye to be politically active.
Uh-huh.
You will be politically active, yet you will be totally free. Because the eye is not politically active. The eye has been destroyed. There's no eye. Therefore, your body can do anything. So Ramana Maharshi died a horrible death of cancer. Yet he never did that. It never happened. Because he had no eye to feel this. There was no eye left to do what you said. There was no eye to die. The eye was destroyed a long time ago. So I'm never saying you have to keep quiet and do nothing. As long as you are in this world as a body, the body will appear in the world of doers. But the point is, you are not that doer.
No.
Even though you're politically active, you get married, you have children, you go through life as a used car salesman, whatever you're doing, it's not you that's doing this. That's the paradox.
So in other words, you kind of go with the flow, but...
No. There's really no flow. You are just doing what you are doing, but you are not the doer. See, there are two worlds, so explain this a little better. There appears to be two worlds, the human world and the spiritual world. The spiritual world does absolutely nothing. But the human world seems to be doing everything. Therefore, the first realization is that the spiritual world is within you. When the spiritual world is within you, you do certain things and you no longer believe you are the doer. When the eye is destroyed by inquiring to whom does this eye come, who is the eye that is the doer? And you keep silent, and the eye is totally destroyed, then you will be totally free, absolutely free, yet to others, the body will appear to be doing things. This is something that is a little difficult for most of us to comprehend. No one is doing anything. Yet the work is getting done. And people appear to be doing things. Yet nothing is taking place. and no one is doing a thing.
I had an experience sort of like that, and maybe you can tell me if it is like that. My daughter told me that she was going to have this painting that I painted for her, and I thought that was kind of funny. I mean, I haven't done any painting in a long time, and it was just, she just said, and then I found myself starting to paint, and she didn't tell me what it was going to be or something. I never thought about it the whole time. And I painted on this for about 2 months, and I never knew where it came from, and I never felt like it had anything to do with me at all. Yeah. It was just, but in the process, when I was painting, I always felt very at peace, and it just happened, you know. And then when I finally gave it to her, it was exactly what she wanted, and she hung it up in her house, and she said, "You have to come and see this." You know, I've got it on the wall. I came and I looked at it, and I didn't feel anything about it. It was just a painting on the wall. It could have been done by anyone. I mean, I could have as easily never seen it before. It was just done.
That's a good example. Life goes on. Your body is karmically inclined to go through certain experiences. And as well, but it has absolutely nothing to do with you. You become spontaneous. Again, the example is like a gigantic screen, and there are images on the screen. One image is you. That is your body going through experiences on the screen. Your body is born. It's a baby. It becomes older, it goes to school. It grows up, becomes a musician. Gets married, has children. Gets old and dies. You are observing all of this. As the screen, you are cognizant of all the happenings of your body going through these experiences. Yet you are apart from this. You are totally free of it. It never really affected you. Now can you see how it works? Images appear on the screen. Wars. Man's inhumanity to man. Civilizations come, civilizations go. All this is taking place on your screen, on yourself. Yet nothing is happening to yourself. The screen is not involved in the war. The screen is not involved in the birth or the death of the person. Yet on the screen, the images are taking place. The screen remains the same, silent, still, unmovable, never changing. Your true self is the screen. And all of the things you go through in life are taking place on the screen. Now the problem is, you have misidentified yourself with the people on the screen rather than with the screen. You see what I'm saying? You believe you are the happening on the screen. You have forgotten that you are the screen. You have identified yourself with the person on the screen. Whereas a Yani, or a realized one, knows themselves 100% to be the screen, yet also the images are taking place as their body. And they're going through all kinds of experiences. But they know 100% sure that they are the screen. They are the self. The self is the screen. Pure awareness is the screen. Satchitananda is the screen. Absolute reality is the screen. You are the screen. Take your identification away from the body consciousness and become the self. Many people, just by listening to this explanation, awaken.
Robert, again, that a dilemma seems to me hard to get past, that if you think I am the screen, there's still an I.
This is for the sake of talking. Forget about the I. There's only the screen. The screen is self-realization. The screen is the Atman. The screen is absolute reality. The screen is God.
But while in the process of appearing to try to awaken, we seem to need a frame of reference. And as long as we identify with the body, we do think, and even thinking of the screen is thinking.
Yes. The time comes when you don't think about the screen. You just are. As you keep practicing, as you keep awakening, as you keep doing the sadness that you have to do, the time will come when you just become.
So I think you just answered my next question, which was going to be that it seems that sadhanas involve thinking.
Sadhana has to involve thinking because you're doing it. In the absolute sense, there's no sadhana. There's absolutely nothing. There's not even a screen. Screen is for the sake of telling you the story about how it is, mm-hmm. to an extent. Because how else would you explain it? But there's no screen. There are no bodies, there's nothing. But yet, for the sake of explanation, that's one way to see it.
I just read something the other day that kind of coincides with this concept that you're just talking about, and that was scientifically they show that light created molecules in atoms, which created vegetable minerals and human beings. And in essence, what you're saying is, when I know that, all I really am is the light. But it appears that the light created all this stuff.
Mm.
And that's, I get caught up in thinking that I'm the stuff instead of the original, the screen or the light.
Yes, you can say that. We're identified with the stuff. Get rid of your stuff.
But at the same time, I mean, on a psychological thing, what you talked about before, judging and comparing and criticizing and all this stuff, right? I do that a lot.
Well, so, stop.
Stop, yeah, right. What I was going to say is, so when I observe this, well, it's not me. I see it out there, you know. It's not me. It's out there. That's what I tell myself, that I see it in everyone else, and the world is just, you know, it's all wrong. Like you said, I'm trying to change it. So I'm judging it and comparing it. But that's what I observe. But the observed, what I'm observing, I'm the observer. And from what I understand, it's the same thing. It's really me. And to realize that I'm the criticizer, and I'm really criticizing myself. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing all my own stuff. I just don't want to own it, so I say it's you that's screwed up.
Of course.
Right?
Sure.
And for me to own that, that's hard to do. I don't want to accept that. I'd rather find out that it's you. I mean, that's a rude awakening. to realize that, you know, I mean, I've got to own this stuff.
Of course, you can only see yourself wherever you look.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's simple, but I don't know. It's
well, that's only one stage of it.
Yeah, I realize that.
As you continue, you realize there's
no one
who has any stuff to begin with.
Yeah.
It's not you at all. It is I. The I appears to have, it's not you. So ask yourself, where did the I come from?
Mm-hmm.
Who gave it birth? How did it appear? And as you acquire this way, you'll realize the I never exists to begin with.
So at a point, is there no realizer either?
There's no realizer.
So the seeking of self-realization, once again,
is erroneous.
It's paradoxical.
Paradoxical too.
That too, yeah.
Certainly. But you have to start somewhere. If you refuse to wake up by my telling you to wake up, then you have to do all these sadness, you have to do all these things. Until you come to the conclusion that there's nobody doing anything. But as long as you believe you're still a body, then you have to do those things that you have to do to find out that there's no body. That's why all is well. That's why everything is in its right place. And everything is unfolding as it should. You are where you are because of what you are. So there are no mistakes. You simply wake up and become free.
So, Robert, what you're saying is it doesn't make any difference what's going on. It doesn't make any difference what's going on in your head. You know, any thoughts, any feelings, nothing. It simply is, and
True.
Just like that.
This is true.
There's just all this stuff flying up, and you can just wake up at any time. It doesn't make any difference where you are at, where you think you're at. And what you're saying is the eye is just an implication. That you get this implication because of the fact that you think you're in this body. So you think this body must have an eye.
Mm.
Is that what you're saying?
That's true, yes.
You just, well, it seems to be implied that there must be an eye here because there's this body.
Because there's a body.
And there's these thoughts going on, so it has to be tacked onto something. It has to be strung onto something. So you take the blame for it, in a sense.
Whenever you refer to your body, you say I.
Mm-hmm.
I is your body. If there were no I, you wouldn't have a body. So you're not trying to get rid of your body, you get rid of the eye. And then everything else goes with it.
So even though all these things seem to be coming down on all your thoughts, all your feelings, all your history, all your memories, that at any second you can just say, I'm not doing anything.
You can see that.
It's just, this is just going on, and I'm it. But you don't think it.
You realize the I is responsible for everything in your life, and there's no I, so you're free.
Robert, I have always identified the I with our Christhood that is what we were before we were here, and it will be with us through eternity. And so when I think of people that have gone on, I always think that, how do I say this? I guess I've been kind of malpracticing, because I always think that this same I is still being supplied from the infinite. But until they get rid of the I altogether, it'll still be on the cycle, and we'll be back.
Exactly.
You see, I've been malpracticing.
You've been doing well, because you realize it now.
Yeah.
Now you realize it.
Yeah.
So everything is happening the way it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You were supposed to realize this tonight.
Well, I've been teaching my children this, you know, because when they think that their grandparents have gone, or, you know, somebody has gone, I have always just felt that I could make them feel secure by telling them that they will never
be
without identity, you know, that they will always be supplied, and they'll be this through eternity. So what do I say now? They'll just, God will just be.
Just tell them that God is... And it all is well.
Yeah. Well, I don't think
and for someone that is on the beginning paths, that's sufficient.
that's sufficient. You can tell them that God will take care of them. God is them. They are God. God is within them. And there's only God, which is the self.
So would it be correct for her to, for example, say of deceased grandparents or whatever that they have gone back to being part of God, or is that also a misnomer? Because I guess you're not part of God, you are God.
If you're talking to children, you have to make it simple so they can understand. So you can tell them they've gone back to God, if you like. That God is everything. God is love. And they become love. And they are all, the whole universe is them. They are the whole universe.
So even though it might be a slight spiritual misnomer, you could tell them they go back to being part of everything or part of God.
Yes.
Although beyond that would be the fact that they are God, period, not part of anything.
For children, you have to make it understandable. So you can tell them that they have melted into God. And God is love. And love is the whole universe.
And then that would help her with the fact that God is eternal and
but you know, I
forever.
I think that if God just is, we should just eliminate trying to explain through the words and just go into God is. Because if you're saying that they are there, then you're still... I mean, they might be back on this cycle. It's not up to us. You should just let them know that God is always, period. And not, is that right, Robert? Not try to get into just having them consoled by that God is. Because if you get into the point that...
It all depends on the involvement of the children.
Mm-hmm.
It depends where they are, what you can say, what they can understand.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be understandable.
Yeah.
But as long as you make them understand that God is, there's nothing but God. The weeds, the flowers, the chicken pox, everything is God.
When you were saying I am in the beginning of I've read so much I am recently, but in the beginning, didn't you say I am?
I am is absolute reality. I am is God.
Right. So couldn't I say that that they are just I am still? You know, that they are I am, the I am that will never leave us and has never been born and never will die?
Sure you can say that.
Well, that's what I say, yeah.
Well, keep it up.
Okay, so that is incorrect. It's just that they, I get you.
Okay. You've got to use a simple language for children.
Yeah.
I think you have to use simple language for us.
Speak for yourself. Go on, do you want to read something about it? Explain what you mean.
In full detail?
No, that's all I understand.
From the Astravakra Gita, the heart of awareness. You are pure. Nothing touches you. What is there to renounce? Let it all go, the body and the mind. Let yourself dissolve. Like bubbles in the sea, all the worlds arise in you. Know you are the self. No, you are one. Let yourself dissolve. You see the world, but like the snake in the rope, it is not really there. You are pure. Let yourself dissolve. You are one and the same in joy and sorrow, hope and despair, life and death. You are already fulfilled. Let yourself dissolve. I am boundless space. The world is a clay pot. This is the truth. There is nothing to accept, nothing to reject, nothing to dissolve. I am the ocean. All the worlds are like waves. This is the truth. Nothing to hold on to, nothing to let go of, nothing to dissolve. I am the mother of pearl. The world is a vein of silver, an illusion. This is the truth. Nothing to grasp, nothing to spurn, nothing to dissolve. I am in all beings. All beings are in me. This is the whole truth. Nothing to embrace, nothing to relinquish, nothing to dissolve.
Thank you, Glenn. Do you want to read the ending?
Yes.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Robin.
We have any announcements?
Yes. We're going to get transcripts, and we have four more. I don't have any myself, so I had to take one of them. And this is Beyond the World of Maya. It's the new one that just came out. It's number 51, and I would like to have people make some copies, if you would, please. Oh, thank you, Jane. Oh, if you could make 10 or more, it would be wonderful.
We have prasad. Remember what prasad is. It's the entire teaching and the teacher. So when you eat prasad, you're eating your teacher.
I'd just like to mention the people have brought back number 49, what is God, that we have come on the table and have some more to draw.
That's backwards. Be happy.
Don't worry.